The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast. Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show. Sorry, could you hear that ring? I'm sorry. I know. It's...
The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast. Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show, and we are going to jump right in with Dr. Christine Schaffner and talk about something fascinating to me. I've been seeing it in practice over and over again and trying to really make heads and tails of this. Dr. Schaffner is a board-certified naturopathic physician who graduated from Bastyr University in Seattle, Washington. She also completed her undergraduate studies in pre-med and psychology at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. Along with practicing medicine in clinics, she has created and co-created partnerships and working relationships with practitioners who are committed to treating persistent Lyme disease all over the world. Through these connections, she has established a unique set of skills and knowledge to serve her patients. Welcome to the show, Dr. Schaffner.
Thank you, Dr. Taz. It's an honor to be here.
I am thrilled you're here, and what I didn't mention in your bio, too, that you're a clinical director of the Sophia Health Institute, and you've also worked with Dr. Klinghardt. And for those of you who know those names, you know, these are places where, you know, a lot of my really tough Lyme patients have gone, patients with other chronic neurodegenerative diseases, and I'm seeing, as I am sure you are as well, that these things they seem to be on the rise. They seem to be an epidemic. Is that what you're observing in your practice?
Yeah, absolutely, Dr. Taz. You know, I've been fortunate enough after school, I started working with Dr. Klinghardt right away. So from day one in my practice, I saw, you know, really the toughest cases. And so he's really equipped me with a knowledge base to really investigate really what are the real reasons why, you know, people are sick today. And I think all of us who are committed at looking at an integrative approach or a functional medicine or naturopathic approach, and we're always asking the reason why our patients are so sick, we have to look at, you know, the environmental factors, you know, these chronic persistent infections and, you know, how this interplays with epigenetics. But unfortunately, more and more people are getting sick, and we see this with the epidemics of autism, and I see younger and younger, you know, especially young women in my practice who are getting autoimmune illnesses, and, you know, it's not just, you know, people who, you know, are in later in life getting these chronic diseases. And so we're really, really passionate about sharing what we're learning, and I feel like we're really on the front line, as you are, treating patients and trying to really understand why they're sick. And of course, you know, that's, you know, the starting point. You know, once we develop, you know, why, we always have to look at the most effective and elegant treatment plans for these patients, which unfortunately takes time to recover their health. But we absolutely see a lot of great success, and it keeps us doing what we're doing.
Do you see a link there? You know, we see, so let's just nail it down. So there's, you know, the rise in autism, there's a rise in Lyme disease, there's a rise in, you know, different autoimmune diseases. You know, on a different kind of spectrum, I'm seeing a rise in PANS pandas, which is that pediatric autoimmune neuroencephalopathy. You know, is there a link that you guys see between all these different conditions, all, you know, neurodegenerative to a point? Is there something there that maybe we're missing, and there's just a common link amongst all of it?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great question, and I do think that we see this common denominator and this common thread, you know, in our patients. And we have to look at a number of factors. You know, I often say with my patients, if it was one thing, you wouldn't be so sick. And, you know, what we're seeing is, it's, you know, this perfect storm, if you will, of, you know, our environment. So that includes heavy metals like aluminum. You know, we're, Professor Chris Exley, you know, calls it the age of, he's British, so aluminium. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how we have this huge exposure to aluminum. There's mercury, lead, cadmium, arsenic, and then it's not just those, but it's the synergistic, you know, perfect storm effect. So then we have the increase in glyphosate exposure and other herbicides. Mm-hmm. And so not one of these things, but the combination is where we're really in an unknown territory that we see our patients. And the environmental factors, not only those things, but also what we're seeing, we consider what we term electrosmog. Dr. Klingert spends, half his time in Europe and, you know, half his time in the United States. And it seems that Europe is a little bit more progressive in studying kind of the effects of things like Wi-Fi and cell phone use. With the advent of all of this technology, of course, it's changed lives and there's so many benefits to it, but it's unfortunately coming at a cost to our neurological system. And we're kind of in this, unknown experiment right now, and that exposure is increasing, you know, more and more. I mean, the iPhone is only 10 years old, it's only getting faster.
It's hard to believe.
It's only 10 years old.
What do we do without our iPhones?
I know.
So,
I know. I love my iPhone, but, you know, I know that there's, you know, ways to kind of safely use it and, you know, try to, you know, practice what I preach. And then, you know, it's like I really feel it's, you know, this synergistic effect of these environmental stressors. And again, you know, glyphosate was just introduced to, our environment in 1996, right? So this is also a newer exposure. So it's this combination of things, and then that is going to be, you know, what's really affecting our immune system because, you know, again, we see what we call persistent Lyme disease. So that includes Borrelia and then co-infections, which include a number of other stressors like Babesia, Bartonella, Mycoplasma, Ehrlichia, these types of things. And then that never comes, you know, just alone. There are also chronic viral infections. There's, people who are sensitive to mold. And again, and then we, of course, see parasitic infections. So it's this combination, Dr. Taz, that's really what's, making people sick. And there are, again, so many well-intentioned, great doctors out there. But if we just look at one of these things and not in the context of everything else, we miss, you know, really the real, you know, the real treatment, you know, effect that we can have on patients. So we unfortunately, our patients are so committed and they're amazing. I always say that they're doing all the hard work because we have the easy job of just telling them what to do, but they have to actually do it, you know, and implement it. And these protocols are comprehensive. These are lifestyle changes that, you know, affect kind of every aspect of our life to really get well.
Well, you know, this is gold. Everything you just rattled off right now, I hope everybody out there listening could catch it. But, you know, everything from an environmental toxicity standpoint might be the link in some of these chronic neurodegenerative diseases. But heavy metals in particular, the role of glyphosate, which is a little creepy because we're seeing it pop up out of our testing, you know, the role of global warming and the increase in the differences in types of bugs and deer ticks. It's no longer just, I think, Borrelia. I think there are maybe millions of varieties that we haven't even identified yet. So for the patient out there who's listening to this, it seems anytime you talk environmental toxins and environmental toxicity creating disease, I think most people walk away feeling defeated. Like, how can I control this? There's nothing I can do about this. There's no way for me to manage this. And that can be further from the truth. So let's break it down for them a little bit. You know, if we're thinking these new environmental stressors, you know, including Wi-Fi, as you mentioned, are all a part of disease today, how do we manage this? Where do we start? And we can break it down by category. Let's start with heavy metals. How do we manage our heavy metal exposure? What can we do about that?
It's a great point because I think education and knowledge is power. But when you enter this paradigm, it can be completely overwhelming, and I don't want to overwhelm people. I absolutely want to empower people. And, you know, there are, you know, very simple, you know, strategies to, you know, start. Anything that you can do nowadays is only going to get you ahead. And so, you know, I'm, you know, being a naturopath, I, you know, first think of, you know, clean, you know, air, clean food, clean water, you know, the foundations of health. And so, you know, when we're thinking of, you know, heavy metals, definitely you want to have a good water filtration system in your house. Aluminum is, again, something that we're, you know, heavily exposed to in a lot of different ways. And aluminum, some water processing in some cities use aluminum sulfate as a way to what we call coagulate the water and get other, bacteria and particles out of the water that can't be catched with other things. And so if you have aluminum and fluoride, if your water is fluoridated, it can create these aluminum fluoride complexes that can be very damaging to our pineal gland. And so I always start with water filtration. I have no affiliation, but there's a Berkey filter that I feel like is the most, it's very affordable. You don't have to, like, redo your house. And that's a start. You can just put it on your kitchen counter, pour your, you know, tap water into it, and it will filter out the fluoride and chlorine and also heavy metals. And, you know, there's, of course, pharmaceuticals in our water and all of these things that we want to, you know, reduce our exposure to. So I absolutely, you know, think about clean water. And then, you know, we're really, when we're thinking about heavy metals and when we're thinking about, you know, again, a lot of our patients have a lot of neurocognitive symptoms, we think about the mouth. And so I'm sure you, you know, do this too with your patients. And we, you know, whenever we're taking a new patient history, we're looking at your dental history. So we always screen our patients for amalgam fillings. And amalgams are amalgam, basically a combination of different metals. And primarily there's mercury amalgam fillings, and mercury is one of the most neurotoxic substances on the planet. And so when you think about, you know, having, you know, the proximity of your teeth to your cranial nerves and to your brain, we absolutely see that mercury vapor over time, you know, can absolutely affect people's neurocognitive abilities. And so we always recommend when we start with patients, of course, you need to do this in a very, very supportive way, to remove their amalgam fillings. And so that can be a huge, that can for some patients be a huge shift. But that, I also don't want people to, I want people to realize that that's step one. If you've had amalgam fillings for 20 years, you have a 20-year exposure, you know, to mercury plus everything that we're getting into the environment. So you have to not only safely remove these with a biological dentist, there's some great biological dentists out there who have been really pioneering this work, but in combination with a great functional or naturopathic doctor to really support the body and really, you know, put a really solid detoxification protocol in place. And then, you know, as far as, you know, that's our main, you know, exposure to mercury. I feel that that's the most debilitating. Of course, there's mercury in our fish. There's some great resources online. You can easily Google nowadays what has high mercury versus low mercury, and then rotating, you know, fish in your diet. And then, you know, lead, you know, we've gotten out of the days of leaded fuel, but airlines still have leaded fuel in the airline industry. So that makes its way into our environment somehow. And then, you know, old buildings can have leaded paint, leaded pipes. You know, I have mentioned with you, Dr. Tass, that we're going to be doing this summit in January around heavy metals, which we have a ton of information, and it's, you know, so many great experts, you know, educated me along the way. I thought I knew something, but I learned a ton. But Dr. Stephanie Senev, she's been a leading glyphosate researcher, and I'm happy to share more, you know, of that work. But just to kind of paint the picture to make this kind of how this is all affecting our environment, she, you know, educated me. I think we all know about, you know, in Flint, Michigan, you know, unfortunately, the, you know, a lot of people are exposed to lead in the water. And she was saying that actually Flint, Michigan is the number one sugar beet capital in the world, or in the country. And so it basically, sugar beets are genetically modified. And so there's a lot of glyphosate in that made its way potentially in the groundwater. And glyphosate can chelate lead in the pipe. So it's going to, in the presence of already a leaded pipe, glyphosate's going to pull that lead and increase that exposure. So I'm just using that as, and she goes into more detail. I know. And again, we're not trying to make everyone freak out. It's just more just an understanding, because when you're sitting on the front lines like you and I, and we're trying to, you know, just scratch our head, how are people, you know, this sick these days, you know, these are the things that matter. So, you know, I focus mainly on mercury, lead and aluminum. Of course, there's cadmium, there's arsenic, you know, there's other neurotoxic metals, but usually if you can identify mercury, lead and aluminum, you're doing enough detox strategies that get the other, you know, heavy metals. So, just limiting your exposure and just understanding, you know, how to educate yourself, but your food and your water are a huge place to start.
So food and water, and that again was the Berkey filter. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
B-E-R-K-E-Y?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Berkey filter.
The Berkey filter.
You know, and then limiting fish that has mercury, and then, you know, getting into kind of glyphosate because of the synergistic effect was not only lead but also aluminum, you know, obviously avoiding genetically modified foods and gluten that are going to be, you know, and that's going to expose you to glyphosate in the food supply.
Okay, so, you know, that helps us a little bit with the, I have 50,000 questions, but let me try to narrow them down because I know you don't have all day to sit with me. Maybe I need to join the Heavy Metal Summit, so we definitely need to let everybody know about that. But anyhow, I just have one quick question. I do want to touch on vaccinations and what you think about the levels. I know most vaccines are hopefully thimerosal-free now, but even the amounts of aluminum and lead and some of the metals in vaccines, how much is that playing into what we're seeing today?
You know, I feel like it's a, you know, not to get controversial, but I feel like it's a huge issue. I see that as a huge exposure. The vaccine schedule you and I had is very different from the ones that, you know, mm-hmm. children are, you know, being subjected to these days. And, you know, definitely, you know, they've definitely cleaned up the thimerosal. I mean, it's still in the, I think, the flu vaccine, which I do not mm-hmm. recommend for anyone. But the, you know, the thing that is most problematic these days is the aluminum, and aluminum is what we call an adjuvant. So it's actually part of what makes the vaccine work. It's not just a preservative. Mm-hmm. And so this can be, you know, when it's injected into the skin, you know, it bypasses all of our natural protective ways that we can protect ourselves from aluminum. And there's some really great studies. This is not just a political opinion or a belief. I mean, these are well-researched that aluminum has a, you know, very potent effect on the brain. So it can be very, create a lot mm-hmm. of neurovascular inflammation. It has led to autoimmune illness. They have studied this. And, you know, I'm sure you and I have both seen many, you know, young women getting sick after a Gardasil vaccine in the perfect storm of their health, with the house, with all of the other things we've seen. And Gardasil has one of the highest amounts of aluminum. So I absolutely, you know, believe that this is a huge, you know, huge exposure, and part of the reason, you know, why we're seeing so many, you know, sick young people. And, you know, Stephanie Seneff actually, she educated me again on the MMR vaccine, the live viral vaccine, and that usually doesn't have aluminum, but they third-party tested it, and the MMR actually has glyphosate, you know, in the vaccine. And so that, you know,
oh my gosh.
They have, out of that, right? And live viruses are usually grown on pig feet in the lab, and so the pigs are usually eating genetically modified corn, and then that, through biochemistry, glyphosate can display something called glycine, which is part of the connective tissue in the pig's feet, and so that somehow migrates into the virus as it's being grown. So that's her theory of how, but it's absolutely been demonstrated and documented that that is in you know, the MMR. So it, absolutely, I mean, nobody wants childhood illnesses. Everyone wants to protect their child if they can, you know, but I think that there should be a really, you know, bigger conversation, and how can we make these things safe? How do we limit the number of neurotoxins, you know, in these injectable vaccines, and protect our children and their immune system, and do this in not just a routine, give a child, you know, six and a visit and cross your fingers. You know, this is having debilitating consequences.
Right. I could not agree more. And then you mentioned glyphosate, and as I had mentioned earlier, like through scanning and some other techniques, we're picking up on it more and more. What do we do about that? I mean, a lot of my patient population is eating organic. We are choosing clean mm-hmm. foods. We are, you know, we're doing that stuff, but glyphosate is still showing up. And then as you've mentioned, it's in the MMR, it chelates lead, it does all these other things. What do we do about that?
It's a great question, and we do an energetic form of testing called autonomic response testing. It's a type mm-hmm. of applied kinesiology, more or less, and so we actually, you know, stress each patient with glyphosate, and I think maybe one every year is not, you know, stressed, you know, by those that stressor in their system. And I mean, there's many ways to now use lab testing to also demonstrate this. But, you know, our point is you can be doing everything right and have an exposure. And, you know, I think it's, you know, complex, you know, Monsanto and or whatever they're called now, you know, say, oh, you know, glyphosate doesn't bioaccumulate, it doesn't harm human cells, but it absolutely we're seeing, you know, that not to be true. And so knowing kind of how glyphosate disrupts our health, you know, we can kind of think about, okay, how do we replete the things that glyphosate is disrupting, which I can go through. And then we kind of have a strategy as well. I know a lot of people are into genetics these days, and we absolutely look at that, but there's, you know, genetics are not black or white in any way. There's this very dynamic epigenetic process that's going on in the body.
Right.
But there is an enzyme called PON1 that comes up in 23andMe and a lot of the reports that we see. And PON1 stands for Paraoxidase 1. It's basically how we detoxify organophosphates and glyphosate. You know, that's one way, you know, in our body. And so we try to, like, support that enzyme, whether people have a SNP or not, with different cofactors, so different nutrients. And so it's just different antioxidants. We have different products that we use, from vitamin C, acai, pomegranate, vitamin E, selenium, you know, these things. So that helps. And then, glyphosate disrupts so many pathways, you know, in our body. We want to support our liver with a cytochrome P450 system. We want to support our gut microbiome because, remember, glyphosate is patented as an antibiotic, so it absolutely has a detrimental effect on our gut microbiome. So we want to replete, you know, with good probiotics and, you know, healthy gut flora. And then it can chelate minerals. And so we, you know, have, you know, all of our patients have mineral deficiencies in some ways. So, you know, we help them with, you know, primarily zinc is a big, you know, nutrient that glyphosate chelates. And so so we have a lot of different tools. We employ homeopathic medicine as well and homeopathic principles. And there are different remedies that are home accords of different dilutions of organophosphates and glyphosate that can basically tell the cells to kind of help it release and, you know, get out of the body, you know, a little bit better. But, you know, the more, you know, like all of our protocols, you know, we're targeting, like, you know, metals and glyphosate and, you know, all the things known and unknown in our environment, and improving just overall detoxification in the body. You know, but of course we target things in the way that we know how, but we're getting rid of, you know, as we improve elimination in the body, we improve, you know, a number of things that are able to, you know, exit, you know, so it's something that we're constantly evaluating and evolving our glyphosate protocol. But we have strategies that seem to be working right now.
Well, again, I think for everybody out there listening, that's a lot to absorb and unpack. But again, the role of environmental toxins, heavy metals, glyphosate is important to understand. And even for us in practice, as you know, I've been practicing for almost a decade as well, but just have been, you know, now able to pick up on some of these things more and more and understand, you know, really the health burden of some of these toxins. And we all do need to come up with a way to manage. And, you know, again, when we have to manage it, it's a comprehensive approach. It's not like classic medicine where we can give you one thing and it's going to take care of it. It's really that you have to deal with all systems. I know we're cutting short on time and I probably need to bring you back, but I do want to touch on one thing you mentioned, which is, you know, the role of Wi-Fi and electromagnetics. What are you guys seeing there? And what do you think, how much is that contributing to everything else, you know, that we're dealing with today?
Yeah, you know, our EMF, exposure is on the rise. And so, again, this is something that can be completely overwhelming at first. But I think there's, you know, Dr. Mercola, I think probably a lot of your listeners know about. He is a friend of Dr. Klinghardt's, and he's become really passionate about this topic. So he's putting a lot more education out there. So there's a lot more resources now where you can go and, you know, educate yourself. So, you know, what some of the simplest things that you can do to protect your, you know, family and your home is, you know, again, we see really sick people. So we actually, you know, tell people not to have Wi-Fi in their home at all and just go back to the, you know, Ethernet cords, if that feels like too big of a step at first, you know, I would say to at least turn off your Wi-Fi at night, because our night is, or at nighttime, our sleep is some of the most restorative, you know, time that we, you know, have for our brain. It's when our lymphatic system works, our brain detoxifies, and Wi-Fi can be a very big stress, you know, on our nervous system at night. And so it's amazing. I'm sure you have many patients who have insomnia or sleep, you know, issues. And once we do a lot of sleep hygiene, that can sometimes be enough. So essentially, you know, sleeping with blackout shades, making sure that no electronics are in the bedroom, you know, turning off the Wi-Fi at night, limiting blue light exposure, which is that blue light that's coming from our electronic screens. There's a lot of tools now to turn that off. I use a screensaver called Flux that basically knows, you know, when it's good at the sun, you know, sets in Seattle, and, you know, limits the blue light in the screen. And then the iPhone now has, I think, night shift, they call it, and takes the blue light, because that can be very stimulating for our pineal gland and interrupt our melatonin production. And so that can, you know, affect our sleep. So, you know, turning the Wi-Fi off at night can be helpful. You know, definitely don't put your cell phone near your head ever. I mean, there's more and more tools. There's different headphones that have the ear tubes that actually work. In the beginning, when they were first coming out, they didn't work as well. So distance is your friend with EMF. So you know, not having these things on your body or close to, you know, your brain. I mean, they've also linked a lot of infertility to electromagnetic field exposure. And so, you know, not putting for men, not putting their cell phone in their pocket. As for women, you know, that can be, you know, affect our reproductive organs. So, you know, distance is going to be, you know, helpful. And then, that's really the key there. So those are maybe two pearls to start with. And then, you know, again, Dr. Mercola has a lot of great information now. There's another researcher in Canada who's taught us a lot. Her name is Magda Havas, H-A-V-A-S, and she has a great website. And then there's tools. I mean, there's a lot of products out there. And, you know, I'm still, you know, I don't know if, you know, all the pendants and things work. You know, some people have, you know, success with them or not, but there are some, you know, tools as far as things that shield EMF that actually I do feel, you know, work. And there's a website called lessemf.com that can be helpful. So there's more tools for, you know, your phone and your computer. So again, you know, I don't think you and I could be doctors without all of this technology anymore. And so I understand the benefit, but we also, you know, I'm hoping that somebody, you know, eventually understands how to do this in a safer way, using safer technology. But in the meantime, I mean, I think obviously our exposure is going to become more increased, you know, than not. So no one's immune. You know, not everybody. Some of my patients are what we call electro hypersensitive, so they actually feel worse. They might get headaches or migraines or rashes or brain fog when they're around, you know, Wi-Fi or body pain. So they feel it in their body, but, you know, studies have shown just because you don't feel it doesn't mean that it doesn't have an effect, right? So, you know, we're getting, with this increased exposure, all of us need to employ or start thinking about more safe practices, especially for our kiddos and the developing brain.
Well, fantastic. I mean, like I said, I think I could talk to you forever. There's so much information here. We'll have to bring you back and even talk more about different environmental toxins, the role of the lymphatics. You know, so much to touch on. But there is a heavy metal summit coming up. So tell our listeners about that, because they may want to jump on that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, Wendy Myers and I, who has also been a guest on your show, are co-hosting, and Dr. Klinger did a handful of interviews as well for a heavy metal summit. It's going to be airing end of January, so January 29th through, I believe, February 5th. And there's a website called theheavymetalsummit.com, and that's going to, you know, if you want to just stay up to date with, you know, our emails and everything, you can enter your email and we can send you information. There's going to be, you know, of course, the first week is free, and we have a lot of great speakers, from Dr. Mercola to Dr. Steneff to Dr. Chris Shade to, you know, just a lot of pioneers in the field. So I hope that you all find that information really valuable and that you can, you know, absolutely find more tools and treatment strategies to maintain and improve your health.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Schaffner, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today. I know I've learned a lot. I'm hoping everybody out there did as well. We look forward to connecting with you either on the Heavy Metal Summit or even what's your website, which is drchristineschaffner.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I have a personal website, and then our practice is Sophia Health Institute. We're outside of Seattle, Washington, in a town called Woodinville, and it's just sophiahi.com. So you can learn more about our practice and our work there as well.
Fantastic. Well, have a great day, and thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Taz. I appreciate the invitation, and I look forward to talking to you soon.